I'm not sure if it's safe to say I can go as long as I want to, because I think I've been known to preach plenty long and usually known to have too much material in my notes. I do plan to open it up for questions when I'm done. I welcome questions. I'm not saying I have the answers. And I stand here a bit. You know, you study for a subject like this and you reflect back on your past life and you discover that you wish you would have known more back then in those years, and particularly thinking of child training, child discipline. The title is Effective Child Discipline. So I stand here in the fear of God, and I also stand here in front of my family, and so they obviously know where their dad's weaknesses were and where he failed. And so it is what it is. So if I say something tonight that you wish your dad would have done, it's because I'm still learning and still in the school life. Well, Satan desires to confuse us in child training and child discipline. A lot of the modern books that you can buy for child training, I disapprove of. I do not agree with. There is some good books out there, some very good books. But this is the best book, and any book that deviates from this book is false teaching, and there's a lot of it. It's to desire everybody, every parent, I believe, desires that their children would obey and listen to them, even in the world. Even people that do not claim this book as their guide desire that their children would listen to them, but they have, unfortunately, they have removed discipline from their schools and from their doctrine and from their belief, the discipline that we're going to talk about tonight, and therefore they have children that a lot of our youth are trying to help in children's ministries, and they don't know what to do with them. We see them here at Summer Bible School, and you just don't know what to do. And because they remove one of the main principles of discipline in their teaching and in their schools and in their family life. I want to read you some stories just for the beginning. And I want you to listen carefully, and we all have seen these stories happen in front of our eyes and our experiences. A mother with a full cart of groceries struggled with her 4-year-old son as they stood in the checkout line. "Billy, I told you to stay here. You may not go over to the magazines." "I want to." Billy jerked free of his mother's arm and ran toward the magazine again. "Get back here right now, or you're going to get it." "No," Billy yelled. Billy's mom quickly stepped out of line, jerked him back by the arm, and pulled him back. Billy began to holler and twisting and pulling away from her. "Let go! Shut up and stand still," his mother hissed angrily. Billy's behavior remained adamant. The struggle continued until the clerk finally rang up the groceries, bagged them, and stacked them in a cart, ready to push out to the car. Homeward went a frustrated mother and son, 4 years old. Story number two. At the main counter of the public library, a woman stood in line waiting for the librarian to stamp the cards on the small stack of books she had selected. Next to her stood her 2 preschool children. The 2 children began arguing with each other, pushing and hitting. "Children, stop at once. Don't you know that this is no way to act?" said the mother feebly. By this time, the librarian was beginning her checkout procedure. The children's rowdy activities caught her attention. As she gazed over the counter to get a look at the argument, the mother spoke up and said, "Oh, I'm sorry for the disturbance. They haven't had their naps yet today. And when they don't get their naps, they're impossible." The librarian went back to her work, and the mother made several more futile attempts to quiet them. When the librarian finished her job, the mother gathered her books and started for the door. Shaking her head, she made one final statement to her children about their behavior. "Oh, children, mommy is so disappointed in you." I just want to point out a little bit in this story, lest I forget. You get the fact that the mother blamed her children's behavior because of lack of nap time. Now, I understand children can get difficult when they need naps. But there's something hiding in that little thing that this woman said, "Well, they didn't have their naps, they're impossible." I've seen adults that behave like children. Do they need naps? It's teaching the children that it's all right to be bad and unreasonable when they're tired or not feeling the best. Well, story number three. A father returns home from a tension-filled day at the office only to discover his 10-year-old son has disobeyed his instructions and is playing with his new set of golf clubs. You good for nothing, kid. Now, I don't use kid in my everyday language. I'm just saying what this father said to his son. I told you not to touch my golf clubs. Why can't you learn to listen to me? Shouted the father cruelly, hitting his son across the face. Remember I said every father and mother wants their children to obey them and listen to them. Even these in this story. But they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do. Their teachers have removed the instructions that they needed. These stories, with three different parents, four different children in focus, but the end results are all the same. It's anger, self-pity, frustration, emotional exhaustion. And the reason I share those stories is, you know, sometimes this comes closer home. You know, we can read these stories, but you know, I know that I'm talking to parents that there's times you're frustrated. You just don't know what to do. And what you're doing, you feel like isn't working because you just repeat it from day to day or maybe from hour to hour. I want to remind you tonight, the world has answers to child training and their results, and the Holy Bible has answers and its results. There's a book that I received some things from that I'm going to share. It's Parenting by the Book, a very good book. It's not written by an Anabaptist, but it's written by a man that came out of those settings, out of psychology, and the false teaching of child training, came out of that and wrote a book on Parenting by the Book. I don't quite agree with everything he may say in that book, but it's very, very good, and I recommend it. Well, the modern, and I just want to lay a little foundation before we get into some of the practical aspects of child discipline, effective child discipline. I want to lay a foundation here because it's very important that we have this foundation, or you're going to be frustrated even with your discipline that you're trying to follow by the Word, by the Bible. Modern child training, by the psychologist, says early childhood experiences shape behavior and personality, and they stop there. Now, I want you to get that. We can borderline believing that. There's times I hear, well, they were brought up in an unfortunate home, a difficult home, and therefore this is why their behavior is like this. This is why we're experiencing this kind of experience in school. And it may be, but I want to give you the Bible principle. And this book that I got some of this information calls it Grandma's Child Training. And the reason it says Grandma's because Grandma is backing up 70 and 80 years. See, what we're experiencing in our schools, modern schools and so forth, in the psychology, has only happened in the last 60 years, 70 years. That this new way of teaching has come in and flooded the market and society. But the Bible way, child's behavior is influenced, but not determined by outside influences. The child chooses his path. We must remember that. A child's behavior is influenced, but not determined by his or her upbringing. Modern psychology says early childhood experiences shape the behavior and personality, and there's nothing you can do about it. There's a lot of children that you experience in the children's ministry. If they were brought into structure, into discipline, you could change how they live. And help them choose the right path. Number two, children are fundamentally good. That's wrong. Children are fundamentally sinful. There's some, that's black and white. Psychology says high esteem is good and parents should help them acquire to it. And you read books about that and they try and lift their children up, push them up. And the Bible teaches modest and humility in all things is desirable. Furthermore, with high self-esteem will be humbled. Some principles that can blur our teaching in our homes, in our churches, in our schools. And I hear it every now and then. Okay, you take like a child. I'll just use this self-esteem thing. Say you have your child is a bit maybe misused in school by other students. Maybe not accepted or maybe not loved like they should be. Maybe there's some things that some other students do things to them that really isn't nice. How you as a parent respond to your child determines a lot about how that child is going to relate to life. I mean, as a father, I always took the approach that, okay, so you're mistreated, you were hurt. You know what? That's all right. Accept that. Just make sure you don't do it to others. You know what? The possibility is that you may be hurting somebody else. Take responsibility, and we'll get to that a little later. Those are some things that are very important. Well, grandma's three R's that we find in the Bible is respect. They're found in the Bible everywhere. Respect. Respect is dignity of every human being. I think Harold Martin had a devotions on Sunday and mentioned something about dignity, maybe, and respect. Is that something that is in our society? Respect? Dignity? Respect for authority? That is number one. Number two, responsibility is found in the Bible. First, for one's own actions. Second, willing to carry out tasks assigned by their authorities. Helping our children have respect and dignity and also helping them to take responsibility. And number three is resourcefulness, just to hang in there and try again and try again with the attitude not to try and find an easy way out. And I want to illustrate what I'm just saying here with a few more stories, and I want to make it personal. We're talking about dignity, we're talking about resourcefulness, and we're talking about responsibility. Your child comes home from school complaining about the teacher. You tell your child that if they know what is good, they would stop acting in ways that displease the teacher. And if they fail to be able to be successful in that, they will not like the consequences. That is the Bible way. And I'm going to tell you the New Age way, the psychology. Your child comes home from school complaining about the teacher. You call the teacher and accuse them of not liking your child, not being fair, etc., etc., and the teacher is on trial. Now, I don't share that because I have anybody in mind. I'm just saying this is what's happening. There's the public school system. A teacher can do absolutely nothing to their children without getting a phone call, or the principal gets a call, or the school board gets a call. I hear these stories with customers that come in, school bus drivers, and you name it. And you know what? Unfortunately, this concept is bleeding into our Mennonite circles because I hear those stories at our school board meetings sometimes. And I'm like, never, never. I don't care if the teacher isn't perfect. We know the teachers are not perfect. We know the principal's not perfect. But students must still be taught, hands down, to respect them. Number two, your child is barred from school from going on a day-long field trip due to careless attitude towards schoolwork. You refuse to take up their defense. You let them take their consequences. Brothers and sisters, I'm talking about teaching our children to take responsibility for their actions. So you pay tuition, I pay tuition, and you pay your taxes. The public schools, they pay their taxes, and they send your children to school, and the children just are careless and don't care. What is the school supposed to do? This is what has happened in our society. Backing up 70 years ago, a school teacher could say, or a school board could decide, a child, you're not going on this day-long school trip because we have given you warning after warning, warning after warning, and this is your careless behavior. Therefore, this is taken from you, and parents would have stood right behind it and supported it. And you know what? The generation of people, those generation are our grandparents. And they knew how to respect, they knew how to be good citizens, and they knew how to behave in church. They knew how to live. And now today, that is removed. I'm talking very plainly, and I'm just sharing my heart. And part number two, the second story, the modern-day parenting. Your child is denied a day-long field trip due to poor attitudes towards school. You complain to the school board and principal that it wasn't fair. The child's self-esteem is going to suffer. Again, school is held hostage to a parent's defense of the child. I got these little stories from this book. And it connected with me. Now, for spanking to be effective, these principles must be in our life, must be in our hearts. This is why I share that. If you don't want to help your child take responsibility, if you don't want to help your child respect authority, if you don't want to help your child be resourcefulness, spanking is going to be frustrating. You're going to be frustrated and the child's going to be frustrated because it doesn't connect. Because what they observe and what they see isn't for real. So those are three principles. If you forget everything I said, think about resourcefulness and taking responsibility and dignity. Or the other one, what was that other word? I get these words mixed up. Respect. Respect and dignity. So the foundation for spanking, disciplining the Bible way, is to have respect and responsibility and resourcefulness. Resourcefulness is not bailing your children out. There's times that they have to work hard. I know there's differences in children. But you know, if a child needs to struggle and work hard, and the parent works alongside them so they can maintain 90% on their grades, really, is it true? Wouldn't it be better if that teach that child to work hard and be diligent and maybe only pull an 85%, but they're diligent and they're learning it and they're getting it, but the parent doesn't want to see their child at that grade or 80%, and so they work hard to get them up there and maintain that, and actually it isn't the child's work. So helping that child be resourceful and hang in there and be diligent. Now, I want to look at some scriptures, just the foundation of effective discipline. I was told that you would like some practical, we want to have practical teaching on discipline the Bible way. And I want to say this, lest I forget. I want to zero in on what we call spanking and disciplining with the rod. And there's a whole lot more to child training and discipline than use of the rod. There's many different forms of discipline. But there's nothing can replace what the scripture teaches on this type of discipline. You can, and the world has been trying it, and we know that hasn't been effective. Okay, Proverbs 13:24 says, "He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes." Very familiar scripture, "He that spareth his rod." If you look for other ways to bring in discipline when you know you should, I just had a teacher call me today, and asked for some direction. We talked about it, and we had to use discipline like the Bible describes. It's just what needs to happen. Proverbs 19:18. "Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying." Proverbs 22:15. "Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him." Proverbs 23:13-14, "Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die." Proverbs 29:15, "The rod and reproof giveth wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." And then if you go to Hebrews chapter 12, I'm just going to turn there. It talks about discipline. But if I'm just going to break in here for time, he says, verse 9, furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father's spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chasten us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth a peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. So in Hebrews, the writer makes mention that we had fathers that exercise discipline. If you look up those word chasten, it refers to this type of chastening with a rod. Now, all those verses I read, it talks about the rod and chasteneth and chasten. It talks about crying, a rod of correction, and beateth him with a rod. Each one of those phrases, tucked in those words and those phrases, is pain. Pain. Discipline does very little if there's no pain. And this is where it's difficult for parents, particularly mothers, especially with young children, when you know you need to discipline and it needs to hurt. And it's hard to hurt that little one-year-old. They're so cute. They're so pleasant. You enjoy them. But I want to tell you, unless discipline causes pain, you're going to be frustrated. And every one of those words, every one of those scriptures, those phrases, talks about pain. You don't cry without pain. It says don't despair of their crying. So why do we use the rod? It could be, some people use a rod, some people use a stick, or so on. Why do we do this? It's biblical. It's God's way. The Bible says foolishness is bound in the heart of each child. And Hebrews 12 says that we do this because our fathers loved us. They disciplined us. We just use the term spanking. They spanked us and in that way. Well, freedom is gained with discipline and structure. It liberates the child from his selfish, independent attitude. And I don't need to tell you, we have a lot of young families here. I don't need to tell you that the children, it isn't long until they express lots of selfishness, lots of independence, and lots of resistance to your authority, to your structure, to your way of life. Just the things that you want to do, the things that you don't want them to do. As soon as you exert some restriction and some resistance, you see that selfish spirit rise up. And it comes up in different ways. And some children more than others. There's this temptation to use rewards to try and get your children to do well. And I want to remind you, and I'm not saying that that a reward is never right. I'm not drawing that line, but rewards does not remove foolishness. Maybe you're in a scene where you can't discipline your child and it's not appropriate, and a reward can just kind of smooth over things and calm things down. But remember, it did not do anything for that child's foolishness. The Bible says there's one way to drive foolishness from your children. What is it? Somebody tell me. The rod. You can come up with all kinds of other techniques. And believe me, if you have foster care and you work with a foster care agency, they will give you all kinds of things, all kinds of lists of things that you can do for that child to try and restrict them and try and maneuver and try and get things in shape around this child. And you know what? It just doesn't work. Foster parents are extremely frustrated because they don't know what to do with these unruly children. Just remember, the reward technique does not remove foolishness. It can maybe smooth things over for a season until maybe you can exercise proper discipline. The rewards will need to get larger and more frequent. And then all while you will become more frustrated as a parent. Foolishness is driven away with pain. Now, a small child, you can use pain. Pain can be holding them tight. I'm not saying hold them that tight that it causes a lot of pain for that child, but to them it's pain. You'd have that one, that 8-month-old child or 12-month-old or 14-month-old child, and they just need to be held tight. And you just hold them tight. And they squirm and you just hold them tight. To them, that's pain. And I support that. You need to do that. You need to restrict them. Maybe there's times you use no snacks or no recess, or you need to stay home. You can't go out after church, sitting quietly. Toys restricted. All those are all kinds of ways that you can exercise some discipline. But that does not replace the use of the rod. Children need restriction. And I'm going to say this here, and I hope you can accept it, but church is not a playground. I believe our children should be taught that at least at church and even after church is not a playground. They can be taught to be restricted for 3 hours out of a day, if it's 3 hours, 9 to 12. If you can't restrict them that long, I guess you have to go home after church sooner. But what I'm saying is that our children need that discipline. It's not so much that it's so bad if they do things. This is not a holy building, but yet they need to reverence the place where we worship God. And I believe that we do ourselves a favor as parents when we restrict them that amount of time that they can learn to listen. Walmart isn't a playground. Dutchway isn't a playground. You don't allow your child to, I've seen it, run up and down the aisles, squealing and carrying on. That's unruly. There's parents who are just letting them run. They're squealing. I'm just telling you, I believe you do yourself a favor. We do ourselves a favor. Our grandparents taught their children, going to church is not a playground. The grocery store is not a great playground. At the table isn't a playground. We try and have order and respect at the table. To have children sit. And there's for 30 minutes they can sit at a table and behave and be respectful. And when you do that for your children, you're doing it for a lot of other areas. Just that fact of that discipline, that restriction. Well, those are just different things I wanted to share. Number two, when do we discipline? First of all, I want to say there's 4 points I hear when you should not discipline for childishness. When the child is just being childish, and be careful that you don't hold your child to a higher standard than what their age or their ability is. There's times that as parents maybe we're frustrated and we think they should know better, and we think that they should just be more mature. And be careful how you exercise discipline on that child, because sometimes children mature and abilities are different than maybe other children at the same age. So there is a normal immaturity in children, so be careful with disciplining for childishness. Accidents, maybe a child is trying to do a good deed, and in the process they break something or destroy something that you would have deemed very valuable, and they break it. Don't discipline the child for that. And number three, maybe the child didn't have complete information. They didn't quite understand. They misunderstood you. Be very careful with discipline. And never spank out of anger. I can pick up that a little later, but do not spank out of anger. So when do you spank? For willful disobedience. And that's a million-dollar question. When do you spank? It's a question I remember. Sometimes we just didn't quite know. Should you spank or shouldn't you? And maybe you spank 4 or 5 times in that day, and here's another episode that you know. It just should spank, but you're not sure if you have the energy to do it. Willful disobedience. Delayed disobedience and incomplete obedience can all be at times that you need a discipline. You need a lot of wisdom. Again, using rewards like money, candy, toys, all those kinds of things are not helping that child to develop character in the proper way. It may help them at the moment, but it doesn't help them develop character. So, well, yeah, rebellion, lying, all that can go in there with that disobedience. Number two, discipline for wrong thoughts and wrong emotions. Now, that one you may struggle with, but I believe that you need to discipline children for their thought life. And their thought life is expressed. They'll say things like, well, I hate you. You don't love me. It's not fair. They'll talk back. They'll say things like, no. And when you discipline for those words, in essence, you're disciplining for a thought process. They didn't just... Nobody taught them those words. It's within them, and they thought that, and they figured that out, and they'll express that. And so you need to discipline them for that. They need a spanking. They need a spanking. Don't even question it. It's you head for the woodshed. Emotions can be self-pity. Maybe they pity themselves, or they wimp around, or they get up in the morning. Some children get up in the morning and they're just miserable. And you need to spank them for that. There's no reason they need to get up in the morning and be grumpy for the next hour. You need to discipline them. It works. It does. I know it works. Romans 12:2 says, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. We help our children with proper thoughts about authority. We help our children with proper thoughts about disappointments. Maybe you have something planned. Maybe you have a trip planned. Maybe you have something that you were going to go to the park with your children, and lo and behold, one of the children gets sick, and you need to say, I'm sorry, but we can't go. We're just canceling out. We're staying home. And you have some children that are just angry and they're upset. What do you do with that? You just let it go? I believe with wisdom, there's proper times to discipline children for those wrong emotions, because it will make a difference. It influences adults when they're in adulthood, how they connect with that. Now, I said earlier, it doesn't have to affect that. Adults can still choose to behave right when things go wrong. They have a self, they have that will to choose. But it makes it easier for adults to learn to accept disappointments when they're taught from little on up. Self-pity and sulking around needs discipline. Even children that cry when it's inappropriate time to cry, sometimes you need to give them a reason to cry. Some pain, to help them learn to have proper emotions at the proper time. Inappropriate laughing can also be another place where you need to exercise discipline. Number three, when children resist restrictions, another reason you discipline a child, maybe the child's sitting in church and they reach for the psalm book, and you get the psalm book and you put it back in, and they throw a fit. Right there, you're tested. Either you're going to get up and walk out and entertain the child in the back rooms and everything's fuzzy and peachy, or you're going to say, this is the line. We're going out and there's going to be discipline. And as you do that, the child will learn that when they reach for the song book and you say no, they're going to think about this. Now, what do I want? Do I want to throw a fit, or am I going to go out back and have some pain? And somewhere along the line, they're going to choose... They would rather not have the psalm book than to experience the pain. And you may think, well, this just don't change. Well, just keep being diligent. Just keep on doing it. It will change. Eventually, that child's going to decide that they don't want that pain. And they'll let the psalm book alone. The other things is if you tell them to come and they walk away, run away from you or crawl away from you. Those are reasons to discipline. When a child resists restriction. Number four, I just want to share this. You need to pick your battlegrounds. You need to pick your battlegrounds because there are stages that children go that mothers feel like this is all that's all they're getting done. Maybe every move the child makes, almost you see discipline. I mean, you sit at the table and the child throws a fit, and you need a discipline. You're trying to work in the kitchen, and they're into something that they're not supposed to be. And after a while, you have number five spankings for that day for that little 2-year-old. And I believe there's something like too many, too much, and you need to pick your battlegrounds. You can't fix everything in one day. You can't discipline foolishness out of the child all in one day, or all in 1 week, or in 2 weeks. But you need to still focus on from a few areas of that day and hold to them. Maybe you're at number five spankings for the child, and it was all for legitimate reasons. And here you see him or her pick up a toy and just throw it. And you hadn't disciplined for that thing that day. And there you have a choice. You can decide, well, you're going to discipline for that, or you're going to just say, okay, I'm going to let that go. I'm not going to spank for that. They already got five, and there'll probably be another one yet when we go put them to bed yet because they resist that. Pick your battlegrounds. Don't think you got to fix it all in one day, or you'll become a nervous wreck and the child will be a nervous wreck. Takes wisdom in those times. Another one I wrote down here. Maybe you're trying to teach them potty training, and you know they're doing well, and suddenly you have a rough day and there's a lot of discipline going on and they're not cooperating very well with the potty training. Maybe you just need to let off disciplining for potty training that day. And don't think that you're just losing ground. Don't think that if one day that you let something go because your discipline load was heavy that you're losing it. Those are just some things that I want to share. The next one, how do you spank? With love. Don't allow the motivation of being embarrassed by your child to cause you to discipline. Maybe you have a child and you're extremely embarrassed by their behavior. And so this kind of gets something stirred up in you and you discipline the child. That's not proper motive. You always discipline for the good of the child, not for your own ego. It's really tempting. I know those feelings. I was familiar with those feelings. You were just embarrassed. You're like, oh, and we thought we taught them better than that. Sorry, children. But don't allow that emotion to motivate you to exercise discipline. Your child's behavior is not necessarily a reflection of your training or lack of. Get that. Young parents, your child's behavior is not necessarily a reflection of your training or lack of. We need to remember our children behave like they do because foolishness is bound in their hearts. Now, I'm going to say this. If you do not discipline in love, their behavior will begin to reflect your type of discipline. Eventually, it will show up. But young children, they're going to act foolishly. They're going to embarrass you. And they're going to. But don't feel like, well, you're being a poor parent and, oh, I can't do this right. Just take the Word of God, apply the Scriptures, apply these principles, buy that good book. There's lots of good books out there, Christian books. There's a lot of false teaching. And just simply move through it, and God will bless you, and I have confidence that you will make progress. Number two, use a right instrument. We talk about a rod or a paddle. I don't support using the hand. I know you can maybe when the child's really young, but you should quickly move away from the hand. There's difference in teachings in that. Actually, that book that I recommended, he says a hand's all right. I don't quite agree with that. I'd rather use a rod, and like to use a rod or a paddle and use the same object every time. Don't just grab something randomly that the child never knows what's going to happen. You know, you're out somewhere and you grab a child misbehaving, you go there and you grab something and spank the child. Nope, I disagree with that. Take that child, go to the place that they're normally used to getting disciplined, and use appropriate rod, appropriate paddle. It connects with the child. Because there's a lot of fear can be in children when they know they're disbehaving. They never know when mom and dad are going to go find something somewhere and give them a good whooping. That's not what the Bible's talking about. Usually when that happens, it's done out of anger and frustration of the parent. And usually the results are not what you would like to see. Number three, spank as promptly as possible. It makes it easier for young children. Maybe when a child gets older, it could be that the child needs to wait till dad comes home and they are old enough to connect with what happened. That we understand that. Number four, clarify the issue and why the need. Communicate with the child. Take that time to communicate. That child to understand why this is needful and why this is taking place. And also, number five, have a child in a surrendered position. Otherwise, you may miss the target. Do not allow the child to move positions. That's a stubborn, resistant spirit in that child. That child needs to be in a position and needs to stay in that position until you're done. If not, anything could happen. And then, unfortunately, the child gets hit places that they should not be hit. And then the child struggles with feelings about that. And so God has made our bodies in such a way in children that there's appropriate places to use the rod. There's lots of cushion, and it's sensitive. It communicates what you want it to communicate. I need to wrap this up. Do not use too many hits nor too little. I tried to figure a little bit of a number and then I never did write it down. But I think a dozen is way too many. I think if a father or mother, if you're spanking your child 12 times, you're not doing it hard enough. It doesn't take 12 good solid spanking slaps to communicate. I like the number of 4 to 6. Maybe that's not enough. I don't know. But I just don't like this hearing. I've heard it already, this wop, 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 wop. And it's just like, I don't like it. It's not good for the child. It's not good for the parent. The repentant cry is what you're listening for. Not a scream, a cry of surrender. And actually, I would prefer, I like this 4 to 6 number. And if that doesn't accomplish it, and you discover maybe you need to start over. I'd rather start over than to just try and do 12 in one shot. I'd rather say, okay, son, daughter, they're not surrendered. We need to do this again. I think it's more effective that way. You may disagree. Don't let go of the situation until you feel the child has surrendered. I know sometimes you're just not sure. You're just not sure. You wish you would know. And I just want to encourage you. There's times when you're just not sure. I will assure you that this thing will resurrect again. The child, you'll have another opportunity to make sure. It will come back. Because if foolishness is still there, it will be back. Number seven, goal must be to bring reconciliation, allow the child to cry. Child needs to be taught to bring their emotions under control. You don't just let them cry indefinite. You discipline the child, you let the child cry, and then you cuddle that child and you show them love. You bring closure, you wipe their tears. You don't give them sympathy or self-pity, but you just try and help them connect with them and that they know that you love them and you care about them and you want to go from here and they're released. They can walk away and they're free and you're never going to bring that up again. Just that reassurance of love and care for them. And then there's nothing wrong with asking them if they understand why you spanked them. When it's all done, the tears are dry, you can say, "Now, can you tell me, this is an older child, maybe a 3 or 4 year old. You ask them why they got spanked. And they can tell you. And you say, that's right. Help make sure they learn that lesson. And then sometimes they need to go back and say they're sorry to other people and parties that may be involved, or siblings, and you go back and you say, I'm sorry. Another thing I want to say is that spanking on heavy padded doesn't do a lot. A young child, you just need to pull the diaper down, pull their pants down, and do what it takes. I hear parents trying to get that sting through the diaper, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Even a pair of jeans, it doesn't work. You need to get to where it counts. And I, as a child gets older, you need to be respectful of that. And it's, and, you know, I didn't put an age to that, but I think common sense tells you that, you know, once they get up in the 8, 9, 10 years old and they may need a spanking, it's not appropriate. So, number 8, be sure to do it in private. This procedures, what I was talking about is private. I do not agree with the long years ago, this thing of discipline in front of the school rooms or in public, just to humiliate the child. Our goal is not to humiliate the child. Our goal is to drive foolishness from the child. So it needs to be done in private. And not only in private because we're worried about the state authorities, we're doing it in private to respect the child. Just makes common sense. And you'll go a lot further. Hebrews 12, verse 11, I have in closing in the Amplified. I read it earlier in the King James. He says here, for the time being, discipline brings no joy, but seems grievous and painful. And that's for the parent and the child. It's not fun to discipline your children. The Bible never says it's enjoyable. It's grievous and it's painful, but afterward it yields a peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it, a harvest of fruit which consists in righteousness, in conformity to God's will and purpose, thoughts and actions, resulting in right living and right standing with God. Through spanking, children, this isn't from the Bible. It says, through spanking, children will come to experience a freedom from selfishness that will allow them to their personality and their gifts God has given them to blossom. Discipline allows children the freedom to blossom in their gifts and their personalities, and everyone's different, and they blossom in that, and it's beautiful. And that's what we experience in church life. Is there any questions? I know I covered a lot of material. I told Brendan I need 5 nights to do what I would like to do. But I'm open to questions. There's something that you may disagree with. That's all right. I would like to discuss it. The what? The instrument, I believe, should. Okay, the Bible talks about the rod, and if you study that out, it a rod or a stick, I don't know, a paddle. Some people make a big deal out of using a rod or a switch. When I did some studies, I kind of got. Kind of open a switch or a rod or a paddle. You have any information, any thoughts on that? Exactly. I like these paddles that Steve Eversole makes. That's not what we used. We didn't have them back then, but it's something very similar. We actually still have it. Actually, I put it away and now we got it back out again because we have grandchildren. And it's at the same location. We can go to the same place, same spot that our children got disciplined, that every now and then a grandchild may need it. We prefer not, but every now and then they may need it. Any other questions? If not, God bless you. And I want to tell you, young families, we appreciate you, and we do not, as you battle with your children at church, We do not look at you critically. We look at you lovingly because we've been there. We understand and we care about you and we pray for you. And keep up the battle and don't get discouraged. You may feel like you're taking two steps forward and one back. Well, at least you're taking two forward and one back, not one front and two back. So just keep on plugging away and God will reward you. The Bible way works. Don't look for some newfangled solution to the issues. This works. God bless you.